All right, it stopped.
All right, that's it. Thank you, sir. That's awesome.
Okay, y'all have a good program.
Hey, Scotty.
Yeah.
How did things go with Lance? Because he did touch base with me. He said he totally enjoyed talking to you.
He got a membership. He ain't started importing nothing yet, though, but...
Okay, cool. I know he's been really busy. It's been nuts how many shows he's been doing. I don't know how he do so many shows because he works as a bus driver, too.
I might set up his subscription. But listen, y'all on air, man, so let me let y'all get on with the
Got program. It. Thank you, brother. Thank you. Greatly appreciate
yes,
you, too.
Yes, thank you, Scotty. Sorry about the technical difficulties. I've been out almost a month now and just got to get back into the – to the swing of things, I guess. Let me find this because I restarted my entire computer, so I got to pull a few things back up before we start.
Okay. No problem.
Okay, so let's just start it like this, and I will continue on while we have this, while we start our introduction.
I put a spell on you. Because you're mine. Stop the things you do. What's up? I ain't lying. Yeah, I can't stand. Woo! No running around. I can't stand. No putting me down. I put a spell on you.
Writing's not that easy, but
excuse me, the way that ended, man, that's how this last month been feeling. Just screams and hollers.
I agree, and it's such a metaphor for the system. I love the way Screaming Jay Hawkins like puts it down. It's just that old folk, deep, rich, black power coming through in his vocals, and it's so accurate. But go ahead, you're right. It describes the last month. Accurately.
Yeah, it was just a description, man. Just to give a little context for those of you who do care. I had a situation where I had already knew I was getting ready to get terminated from a job. And stupid decision on my part. I wouldn't advise anyone else to do this, but I seen everything falling into place, and just so happens that right before everything happened, I was able to get all of my opinions alongside of the facts of the matter at my particular job at that time, and just gave the region manager over the company, just gave him everything that I had been holding in. And for those of you that know me, know I didn't really hold much in. So for me to just give that extra adjective, I gave a little bit more, embarrassed him as much as possible. Actually, felt great until that next week when that check didn't come in. Although I was preparing for it, I still wasn't ready. But that, alongside a few other things, is the reason why I decided to take me a small vacation, just a mental break from everything that we discuss, everything that I've personally been through, whether it was me, myself, family or friends. Just a lot of things has gone on. A few of them, people who listen to us regularly have an understanding about, like the slave catcher situation, car wrecks, just a number of things. So I thank y'all for tuning in and checking us out first and foremost, but always giving your opinions and just your point of view on different subjects that we bring up, because although they may not be personal to us, me and Roz specifically, but they could be personal to you or one of your loved ones. So we always greatly appreciate that. Greetings, Brother Otis. Glad to, can't wait to hear what you have for us tonight. Tonight is April the 2nd. Hopefully you didn't get terrorized on what they are deeming April Fool's Day yesterday. And just welcome back to the program. Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back.
Yes, greetings to everybody. Again, welcome back. It's been a while. I have some family stuff to take care of, and other stuff happened too. It's just been an action-packed last 30 days. There's just no way of putting it other than that. It's just been thing after thing, and I'm back, though, and that's what counts in this moment, and I'm really glad to be back. I've missed everyone. It's been a little while, but we're getting back into the swing of things, and tonight's program is going to be quite interesting. Even today, we just found out some news about a good friend of ours and whatnot, and it's just interesting. It's really, really wild last month, and hopefully the time moving forward will be a lot better, and we'll be moving into bigger and better things, both individually and collectively, all of us. That's what I'm hoping for everybody who's within earshot of what I'm saying, or if you listen to the podcast at a later date. So, yeah. Anything else you wanted to chime in with before we move in or go in?
Just for us to be careful about, we've talked about the energy economy several times on this show. Talked about it on other shows as well. And there's a lot of things going on to stretch the thought pattern out very, very thinly. Meanwhile, outside of the tabloids, and because that's what the media has become, it's basically become a tabloid. So outside of the U.S. media, there are other serious things that are happening, which they always are. But these particular issues are not making too many news outlets at all. But before we get into those, I know you had a few articles that you wanted to introduce. Roz, you want to go ahead on and do that? And
sure, but go ahead.
Let me say this last thing before you go. If you have a question or comment, by all means, give us a call. That number is 802-704-5056. Press star
it's star 704-802-5056.
Thank you. See that
no problem.
Done dummy. Press star star to open up your mic, and we'll be with you as soon as possible. Go ahead, Ross.
All right. Yes, before we get started, I just want to just ask everyone to continue to support Black Talk Radio Network. You can always donate at blacktalkradionetwork.com. There's an icon, I think it's the letter B, that you can click to make a donation that way. I believe there's also an address if you wish to mail in like a money order or something of that nature, a check. Also, you do have the option of joining BTR Community, a closed Black social networking platform that does not sell any information of its users whatsoever. It's a closed community, so you don't have to worry about any of your online activity costing you any issues, whether it's you losing your job because they see that you posted something and somebody in your company didn't agree with your views on a particular subject, so they let you go, which happens a lot with Facebook and other platforms. You don't have to worry about that on BTR Community, and it's $24 per year for a subscription. It's a great space. We got quite a few people there that regularly contribute, including myself. So look forward to seeing you there, and hopefully you will continue to support Black Talk Radio Network through those different mediums. Thanks again for that. And with that, before, I just want to make sure I got that out the way first. Now we're going to move into some of these articles I wanted to get into. The first one, let me pull it up real quick. Okay, so the first one is from thesilveredge.com, and its title is Silver Clinically Effective Against Leukemia? So this is basically dealing with, again, colloidal silver's cancer-fighting capabilities. And what I like about this site is they get a lot of documented information, or they have actual people who had these diseases who actually healed themselves. So I'm just going to read a little bit of this. So it says, about 15 years ago, I had a chance encounter with a businesswoman who told me her adult brother was dying of leukemia. Of leukemia, which is a cancer of the bone marrow and the blood. She mentioned that he was suffering from multiple infections due to the leukemia, and his doctors could no longer help him. So I told her a little bit about the nutritional supplement with colloidal silver, and explained that many people use it to stop infections, even very serious infections. I then directed her to some informational sources. After which, she purchased some colloidal silver for her brother from a local health food store and took it to him. A month later, she contacted me extremely excited, claiming that the colloidal silver had completely reversed her brother's downward spiral. She says, quote, it helped get rid of the infections, I asked, and he says that. And she says, better than that, he thinks it got rid of his leukemia altogether. He hasn't felt this good in years. Unfortunately, over the course of time, I lost touch with her, so I don't know whether or not her brother's improvement was permanent or if the leukemia really did go into remission. But the news was exciting because at the time, silver was not really known for its anti-cancer or anti-leukemic qualities. Indeed, that experience took place some 15 years ago. Most of the clinical studies demonstrating silver to be effective against cancer cells have been conducted within the past 10 years, with some of the very best studies being conducted over the last 5 years. So this is one, this is just a short one. For example, last year I received this interesting message about colloidal silver and leukemia from a member of the Colloidal Silver Secrets community on Facebook. She wrote, my stepfather cured his leukemia with colloidal silver. He was diagnosed by his doctor of having leukemia, and the doctor wanted to start the traditional treatment, but instead he chose to take colloidal silver. He learned from his brother how to make his own colloidal silver at home. Next checkup at the doctor, he discovered he no longer had leukemia. He's 86 now, and this happened probably 6 years ago. He takes his colloidal silver daily and is healthy as a horse, unquote. So that's just one. And there's a few different anecdotal accounts, and I believe he has a couple of clinical studies with showing colloidal silver's effectiveness against cancer cells and tumors. So that's just the one dealing with leukemia. There's actually more to come. So let's get into the next one. Is there anything you wanted to comment on that before I get to the next one?
Not yet, because they're all kind of pushing the same message, so I'm going to just wait.
Okay, cool. No problem. All right, so the next one is nanosilver prevents and beats skin cancer. And this is just published January 7th of this year. So all of these particular articles actually all came out this year, either in the past month or the past few months. So this one says, news article claims that more than 90% of melanoma and 90% of melanoma, the worst form of skin cancer, are caused by skin cell damage from excessive exposure to the sun or other sources of ultraviolet radiation, such as tanning beds. It also points out that through the industrial world, skin cancer rates have jumped tremendously. For example, There's been a 70% jump in Spain and Britain, and a 60% jump in the Netherlands, a 50% jump in France and Belgium, and an astonishing 100% jump in Ireland and Croatia. And they're talking about the pale to the pale with Ireland and Croatia. So the rates of skin cancer are definitely on the increase worldwide and have been for over 30 years. So it says, Okay, so it says, can silver help? So the tiny atoms of silver, such as those found in nanosilver and other colloidal silver products, be an important answer to the growing scourge of skin cancer. Truth be told, there's mounting evidence, both clinical and anecdotal, that strongly suggests the answer to that question is yes. This includes a number of new clinical studies demonstrating that silver nanoparticles not only stop cancer from forming, but can potentially cure existing skin cancers as well. I'll stop there. So I just want to just hit you with that one. You got another one coming. And these are all different illnesses. So just so, you might have people that are dealing with it. I know Bob Marley, that's what he died from, was actually melanoma. And he got it from his British. And they said the British have some of the highest rates. His white British father. It was those genetics that provided him with the conduit for malignant melanoma to form when he hurt his toe playing soccer. So this one, I'll just read the title. Clinical studies show that, this is all from the Silver Edge. Clinical studies show that silver controls bacteria and other microbes on contact lenses. So this is a way of actually cleaning your contact lenses, getting rid of microbacteria or any sort of infectious material on it. To make sure that you're putting something pristine in your eye, and your eye is probably the most important part of, important sense, because we are mostly visual more than anything else. And it's probably the only part of the brain that physically touches the outside world in such a capacity, because your eyes are actually a part of the brain. So it's a very interesting thing. So this fourth one is also from the Silver Edge, and it's entitled Silver Nanoparticles Kill Colon Cancer Cells, 12 Studies. And this was from February 4th of this year. So it says, according to the CDC, of cancers that affect both men and women, colorectal cancer is the second leading cause of cancer-related deaths in the United States. It is the third most common cancer in men and women. Indeed, there are as many as 135,430 new cases of colon and rectal cancers in the U.S. each year, resulting in 50,260 deaths. One in every 20 people will be diagnosed with colorectal cancer, which is colon or rectal cancer. Silver kills colon cancer cells. Thankfully, there's been a number of in vitro or test tube studies done over the last 10 years using various forms of antimicrobial silver against colon cancer cells, each of which have demonstrated silver's effectiveness against the cancer cells. We'll take a quick look at the 12 studies below. So I'm just going to stop there. The articles that we're all talking about tonight can be found in the Real Life, the Radio Show thread in BTR community for tonight's program. And this one basically goes completely into the fact that silver kills colon cancer cells, and it can also prevent colon cancer. So again, if you're trying to be preemptive against something like cancer, that's freaking awesome. You should take colloidal silver regularly. It's also good for a bunch of infections, colds, flus, MMR, you name it, it kills it. And also, if you're dealing with breast cancer or are prone to breast cancer, selenium is what you should be taking. Women should be taking selenium. It reduces your possibility of getting breast cancer by 80%, according to a doctor who we actually played on a couple of shows previously. He had discussed that and said that it will reduce your susceptibility to cancer by 80% if you take selenium. So I just wanted to toss that out there, too. Let me move on from this and see what if there's anything else I have. Okay.
Say again.
For the health articles, I wanted to focus on. This one is actually a short
video.
YouTube video. Yeah, on the seed of the avocado and how incredibly powerful it is medicinally. But go ahead, you wanted to comment now that I went through all of those?
Well, I have a few of my own, and it's interesting that you're talking about how magnificent the avocado is, because it was being discussed that if or when, I'm not sure, I thought I knew a few things about, I could watch his movements and kind of guide myself on where he's going, but he's very difficult to keep track of. The U.S. president is who I'm speaking of, Donald Trump.
Okay.
Closing the border would do almost, excuse me, it will almost eliminate avocados out of our diet. So that's one of the things that they're proposing.
Say that again.
The U.S. border being closed to Mexico.
Oh, shucks, you're right.
It will almost eliminate avocados out of our diet. If you wanted to go into the, I'm finna pull this article up and I was gonna read, I'm gonna have to look at it again because I'm all of them running together in my head right now about what I wanted to discuss.
No problem.
But that was a serious issue and it's just a coincidence. Well, there's no such thing, so I shouldn't say that. But it's interesting nonetheless. That was one of the articles that you had brought up when we decided that we was going to take on the show tonight.
Yeah, it is quite telling. And in the Laws of Tahuti, he says that coincidence is the law not recognized. So even when something happens, even if it's an accident, it happened according to the law. And if you're not perceptive of that law at work and in action, then you'll say that it's a coincidence. When in reality, it was something that was supposed to happen because that's just the way that the trajectory of that situation was supposed to happen. I think what we do as people is we separate the animal kingdom from ourselves and we're a part of the animal kingdom. So when things that we normally see and happen in the animal kingdom happen to us as human beings, it seems kind of disconcerting. I will put it like that. And sometimes people have a very brief and sad existence. Like we have to take all accounts, everything into account. Life is not going to be perfect for everyone. People are going to suffer in a myriad of ways as we see on a global scale and just in our local community. And people are going to die prematurely and have horrible things happen to them because that is a part of the tapestry of what we call life on this planet in the system of white supremacy, especially. A lot of these things wouldn't be happening if that wasn't the dynamic, but we're pretty much all affected by it in some capacity. So we're all walking around with a sickness that we, you know, have a very hard time getting rid of. Or if we ever do, I don't know of anyone who's completely been able to do so.
Yeah,
so,
well, you know, the Most High say that all of the everything that we need for our bodies is in the ground. So
without question.
I want to play this real quick. And
sure, go right ahead.
Let this load up.
Which one is it?
Oh, this.
Oh, which one that you have?
This is the one on avocados.
Oh, cool. Okay.
They pump fake me on that one. Let me go through this. My fault. I want to make sure
right.
This is the...
I had myself muted.
No worries. Now, this comes from thehill.com. And the headline is, Mexican has avocado prices jump 34% today. The price for Hass avocados from Michoacán, Mexican's main avocado producing region increased 34% on Tuesday amid President Trump's call to shut down the U.S.-Mexico border, Bloomberg News reported Tuesday. That was the biggest one-day increase since 2009, according to the news outlet, which noted that 75 to 80% of avocados consumed in the U.S. come from Mexico. If Trump were to close the border, the U.S. would face a severe shortage of the fruit. Separately, the head of the world's largest avocado distributor told Reuters that the U.S. would run out of avocados in 3 weeks if the border was shut down. Trump threatened to closed the border on Friday unless Mexico stopped all illegal immigration to the U.S. Quote, if Mexico doesn't immediately stop all illegal immigration coming into the United States through our southern borders, they misspelled that. I will be closing, he tweeted, the border or large sections of the border next week, unquote. So just to get an idea of why that plays a part for you, even those who for those who do take in avocados, I'd like to play this.
The benefits of avocado. Avocado, also known as alligator pear, is a type of fruit that is high fatty acid but low in cholesterol. Avocados are rich in various vitamins, nutrients, and minerals, and are considered as a superfood in the food calorie pyramid. Avocados are rich in potassium, and they balance the potassium to sodium ratio, which is vital to maintaining overall health. Avocados can be used to prepare face and hair masks, as they are packed with skin and hair-enriching nutrients. Consuming avocados helps in preventing an upset stomach and indigestion, which could cause bad breath. Including avocados in your diet will help you with weight management and provide nutrition to the body. Avocado salad or toast is a healthy option that prepares the digestive tract to function at its highest level. Avocados are one of the healthiest fruits that reduce inflammation in joints, tissues, and muscles due to their anti-inflammatory properties. Beta-sitosterol, a chemical compound found in avocados, helps maintain a healthy heart by keeping the cholesterol level in check. The health benefits of avocados include a lower risk of cancers, including prostate cancer and breast cancer. Avocado is also beneficial for athletes to maintain optimal nutrition to fuel their body and build strength and stamina. To consume the fruit, cut it in half from the middle using a sharp knife and slice it by pressing the knife against the pit. You can garnish soups and stews with chopped avocados for enhancing their flavor and enjoying the health benefits of this fruit. Avocados with no dark spots are the best to choose. Avoid refrigerating them unless they are ripe. Fun fact, avocado is technically a type of berry and not a vegetable, and it is a healthy and versatile food item used in many dishes. Subscribe and press.
Okay. Now, the reason I want to play that, because I know it's a lot of, there's a lot of people who, hopefully, who listen to this playback, if not listening right now, will hear this and be like, why would I care about avocados not being here? Here's the thing, and she stated it, even if you don't consume it because of its health benefits, avocado is immersed in a lot of your cosmetic products. When you take something that's so big in that particular industry and you withdraw it, it has to be replaced with something. And we know just by history alone that when these pharmaceutical companies, because that's who has a part, they have a stake in the cosmetics, when they decide to do something, they don't necessarily tell us. So what would happen for the face mask that you use for your children who have eczema, the hair wash, lotions, the different butters that all of us use? Well, that I use and a lot of people that I know, they use. It would have to be replaced with something. And considering these companies don't like losing money, they have been known to just throw things in for the time being. And I believe Now, this is only my belief. Once again, we share information that we think will be useful to you, even if you don't know anything about it. The chemicals that they will replace that with will be a little bit more damaging than the not so fresh avocados that they put in those cosmetics. Did you want to speak to that point? I just wanted to make that very small point real quick, Ross.
Sure. I'll say avocados, that's something I grew up eating from so young, I can't even remember. And it was one of the most important parts of my diet as far as just growing up in the Trinidadian household. And it is such a nutrient-rich fruit that it's mind-blowing. Matter of fact, it's so full of like the healthy omega-3s and all the fatty acids that it's one of those like super fruits. And you can even use it as in place of butter. If you wanted to like cook something, let's say, and you can use it, let's say if you would use butter to fry an egg and you wanted to use something that was healthy, you can actually take a slice of avocado and put it in there and use it that way. That's how fat rich it is. And like Jenna said, everything that they do, when they lose access to something, they're going to replace it. The question is, what are they going to replace it with? It's usually something synthetic. It's usually something that is toxic. And sometimes we don't put together how these conflicts on the global stage can play a role in changing our everyday lives. It's the same thing, like if America got into a real bad issue with Ghana and Nigeria, that's where the overwhelming majority of shea butter comes from. Shea butter is in every cosmetic product that you have. It cures so many skin illnesses. It protects you from the sun. It is incredible what that one shea nut fruit provides to the global economy in regards to all the different products that it's a part of, soaps and all types of makeup, lip balms. I mean, it's just ridiculous, all the things that it's in. And if they were to get into a major issue with them, that would cut off the shea butter trade.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would see all kinds of things collapse over here because shea butter is a foundational element of so many different products. It will blow your mind. So we have to start thinking about the way these relationships play out. You know, even looking at avocado, that's one of the main reasons that for many years, Mexicans were some of the world's longest lived people. It was their incredible use and consistent use of avocado and their consistent use of pepper. Peppers prevent heart attack. They had like a zero heart attack rate, and their heart attack rate skyrocketed hundreds of percent when they started allowing Western food in. When they started allowing all the KFC and the McDonald's and all of that, that's when their heart problems became an issue. They never had that. And it's like the invasion of the West is toxic. And you don't notice it if you don't come from another country. I noticed it with Trinidad. It's the same thing. And just about everywhere else. The difference is, I would say that the quality of the food you're given in those countries is way better. So if you go to Trinidad and eat a chicken sandwich there, you're going to know what real chicken tastes like because they don't do GMOs. They grow their food in sustainable situations. So when you eat the food, you're going to be like, wait a minute, this actually tastes good. And it's because it's real food. When you come back to the States, you don't know what you eat. So that's a major difference. If you do eat these things in other countries, you're going to be like, wow, the taste of it is completely different to what I'm accustomed to. And it's because they use actual real ingredients, no petri dish, nothing, you know, no caged chickens, none of that. So that's what I'll say on that subject. I don't know if I went on a tangent.
Nah, you were great, man. It made a lot of sense. And what I want to say before we move on is that I'm not bringing this up to make it to be like some catastrophic event or nothing like that. These are just small bits of information that carry a lot of weight. For those of you women who put on cosmetics, like we were stating, those butters and foundational makeup and all of this stuff, avocado is in that. For those of you who take care of their hair, avocados is in that. And when those things get replaced, it has a when those things get replaced, they have an effect on your skin and your hair. And these are just different things to take note of, to pay attention a little bit more to those labels if we haven't been doing that before. Because once this thing, because it's just going to get slipped in on you. They never tell us when it's happening. And it could have already done happened just because of the kind of like when Russia decided that since it was going to be a conflict, they was going to withhold the, not Russia, but when the U.S. put the tariffs on Russia and they began to withhold the aluminum. I seen that firsthand in my job. All of these people scrambling around to figure out what's going on, but not telling the people who work there. We just getting abused day by day. But just being a little bit informed, I was aware. And when I asked them about it, they can't do anything but tell me what they're doing because they so much in shock that I'm aware of what's happening. And these little bitty small moves that we think are meaningless carry a lot of weight into how we deal with our family. But seems like we're at the top of the hour, Raj. You want to go into this commercial break real quick?
Sure. You are on the radio right now with myself and my co-host, Jenna Kepra, on Real Life, the radio show. If you wish to call in and make a comment or ask a question, please do so at 704-802-5056. Again, that's 704-802-5056. Press ** if you wish to ask a question or make a comment, and please watch your background noise.
Turn the mic up. Get them audios correct. Yeah, them instrumentals you came up with, man, they dope. We're gonna have to we're gonna have to do something weird with those, man. We can't just leave them just plain. We're gonna have to do something with them. But welcome back to Real Life, the radio show. Once again, it feels great to be back on. Hopefully, the information that's being provided will be constructive. Since we was on the subject of global warming, when we was talking about the when you was reading the article off of the Silver Edge, I wanted to go into this. Now this article comes from grist.org, and I believe this is a foreign paper. Foreign website, I believe. I'm not sure, but headline goes as follows: the vote holding humanity's precious seeds is on thin ice. The Crop Trust, the organization tasked by the UN with preserving the world's diversity of crops, has a slippery problem on its hands. Its most important effort, the Global Seed Vault, is buried in an abandoned coal mine in Svalbard, a chain of Norwegian islands several hundred miles from the North Pole. Kept at an icy 18 degrees Celsius year-round and installed by layers of thick rock and permafrost, the seed tomb holds 968,000 varieties of crops and has the capacity to store 2.5 billion individual seeds. The Crop Trust says the vault is in an ideal location for long-term seed storage, in part because of the surrounding permafrost provides a quote-unquote cost-effective and fail-safe method to conserve seeds. Now, I'm going to repeat that part right there. A quote-unquote cost-effective and fail-safe method to conserve seeds. As we come on up to today, the permafrost has begun to melt around around the vault, which is putting them in a position to where they don't know what they're going to do with all of the seeds, because if the ice melts, then it floods. So let me go on and continue this article. There's just one problem. Rising temperatures are melting that critical permafrost, jeopardizing the doomsday vault. The towns in the Archipelago and humanity as a whole. A researcher at the Norwegian Meteorological Institute recently told CNN that Longyearbyen, the capital of Suave, is probably warming faster than any other town on Earth. The report published earlier this year by the Norwegian Center for Climate Services shows that climate in Suave is going to change drastically by the year 2100. If humanity continues emitting greenhouse gases, businesses as usual, Svalbard is looking at an annual air temperature increase of 10 degrees Celsius. Even under medium emission scenario where greenhouse gases are reduced, it could still see 7 degrees Celsius of warming. Climate change is projected to increase rainfall in the region by as much as 65% by the end of the century, and in addition to making avalanches and landslides more frequent. Norway already committed to spending $13 million to upgrade the facility early last year after melting permafrost threatened to leak into the vault. New additions to the structure will include a concrete tunnel, backup power sources, and refrigeration. But after a frighteningly warm Arctic winter season this year, who knows how much more money will need to be sent to safeguard the vault against the myriad of threats posed by climate change. I see this. Now, before you give me your thoughts on this, Rise, I see this kind of lining into place with Bill Gates and his vaccinations, talking about killing off a small population of the planet because of climate change. Just different, and I could be wrong. These two may not even have no tie-in together whatsoever. Just different things that I see. One goal having several objectives attached to them, and I believe it's just about pointing them out with whatever you do. Bring it up to your local representative and see what they're thinking about climate change and all of these things, and how they're going to get the population under control, because we are missing. Just here last week, I believe it was reported again, 20,000 women and children out of Chicago was missing. Like it's so many things happening all at once, and they all seem to be surrounding getting rid of people. And who are the favorites to be getting rid of across the globe? We are. But what you think about that article, Ross?
There's a few things. First, I think it's ridiculous, and we're seeing how stupid these things are now that things are at a critical state. Why would you have all of the world's seeds in one vault, in one place? To me, they should have been spread around in different parts of the world. So in case you lose a store, you have another store elsewhere. Recently, there was an article I posted about the fact that the weather's warming so much that Mount Everest is now seeing. They have over 300 dead people that died trying to climb to the top of Mount Everest, and all of their bodies are now being exposed. The monks have to go up there and get these people. Some of them have been buried for 100 years or more. Other ones, the ones that died more recent, are in the higher permafrost. The older ones are starting to appear that were there like 100 years ago, you know, 60, 80 years ago. And they have to, you know, bury these people. So it's a really, really incredible an incredibly fast-growing problem. New York City itself is going to be underwater. They're already under the water table. They're going to have to build a seawall to, like how they have one down in Louisiana. They're going to have all of that kind of set up to keep the sea out because they're very far below sea level. The Maldives is actually the most acutely affected country on the planet in regards to climate change. Some parts of their island is only 8 feet above sea level, and that has dropped to 4 feet in recent years. So they said they might be the first country that has been completely displaced by in history by climate change. They said the entire Maldives as a country might not exist because it's going to end up underwater.
Did you say
how quickly the sea levels are rising? Go ahead.
Did you say they was going to be the first country in history?
To be completely displaced.
You mean
by climate change?
So we ain't gonna count Atlantis.
There'll be no Maldives. All of those people will have to relocate to another country. That's pretty much what will happen to all of those people.
If it
continues on the path it's going.
It was just an unsuccessful joke. That's
oh, my bad. My bad. That in and of itself is funny. But I think with the seeds, it's just not too intelligent to have everything. All the world stores in one place, just like we're seeing with the gold situation. All these countries trust the United States to hold their gold, and now that they're asking for their gold back, all of them somehow are not getting their gold back because you're putting your trust in another country in a system that's designed to dominate you. So you're giving it to the people that's the most, you know, just egregious as far as their global behavior. And you're trusting them? Okay, so now that things are critical and, you know, the economy's about to collapse, do you really think the U.S. is going to give you back your gold? You're out of your mind. So I think it's the same thing with the seas. What if Norway gets mad at the world and says, screw y'all, you're not getting no seas? Like, they have everything. I just think that's not intelligent. And
why is it?
Go ahead.
No, excuse me. I'm sorry about that. But that's for us to assume that they're actually there. I mean, all we've seen was a video of somebody walking into something and showing us something. You know, we don't know where that was at. Let's just be logical. They lied to us about so much. I mean, why are we believing that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just one perspective, though. You know, I'd be thinking like that.
But again, I agree with you. It does coincide with population control. From what I understand, they wanted to get rid of the overwhelming majority of the people on the planet. So all of these different things that would create mass killing or mass death would be nothing but beneficial as far as the globalists and their plan, pretty much. So, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily orchestrated because climate change is something that would have happened anyway. It's a natural cycling of the planet. It's just that human activities accelerated that natural process, and it's not going to be beneficial to the living creatures of the planet. And with the sheer number of animals that are dying, then it's going to create a scenario where we're not going to be able to live either. I'll just say the bees, for example, which are dying off at an astronomical rate. They're even talking about using artificial bees, robot bees, to actually pollinate where bees have died off completely.
Oh, man.
They're doing that now. It's major.
Fantastic voyage, man. We got to finish that book.
Absolutely.
Yes, we do. But did you have something else you wanted to add to that before we move on, Ross?
No, that was it, really.
Okay, and let me, so this is what I forgot to put this in, so I'm going to put this in BTR community. And this comes from Persia Printers. What this is a 3D printing. What this particular article is speaking of is 3D printing terrain and landscapes. Shout out to Brother Jambone for sending me this. Some people may think it's cool, and I think it's cool. It will be wonderful to have just to be able to show your children, especially in a shit hit the fan situation, y'all got an actual 3D printing of the area that you live in and the surrounding areas to be, you know, put your little army, man, this way you gonna go if this happened, you know, that would be awesome. But me coming from where I come from and some of the things that I used to do, people who still live in that thought.
Jenny, you muted yourself? I don't hear you. Did you mute yourself? I wonder if you have a technical issue.
Yo, Ross, can you hear me now?
I hear you now. Yep.
Okay.
You're good.
For whatever reason, it said that I unplugged my audio, and then it said I plugged it back up. I didn't. So what did you not hear? Did you? Let me just go back over it. This comes from Persia Printers. How to print maps, terrains, and landscapes on a 3D printer. So I'm going to put this article. Oh, I read it. I just put it in BTR community. I'm not going to go through it. I just wanted to have y'all to be aware that there are people who already have this technology. Because it's always a wonder how people get into particular situations if they're not with the military and they just seem to swarm in on the place. We've seen some of the mass shootings that's went on throughout the last couple of years, and they just happen to be in strategic spots all of the time. I'm not sure if anybody ever noticed that. The one that happened down in Las Vegas, you know, he had everything sitting off right from the top building of that hotel, going around and being able to just close off different patterns at government buildings. You have to been and studied that. This is nothing right. That you could just jump up and go do first time, not knowing where you're going. So I believe this has already been in play. It's just beginning to come out to the public right now. And with all of these suspected races running around here feeling emboldened to do something to any of us, I don't doubt that some of them are using this technology to know where our cutoff points are at. A lot of the projects in the country are all surrounded by interstates. If you could have the terrain to know every single cutoff point or choke off point, what they called it in the service, then you shut down everything. And it don't take that many men heavily armed like some of these suspected races are to do that. So just things to be aware of, articles that came to my possession that I thought I needed to share with you guys. Did you have anything to speak to from that standpoint, Ross?
Yeah, I think that's something that's very important because these militia groups are really making themselves known. And I think that from what I understand, the United States has the largest standing military on the planet as far as the sheer number of citizens that are militia-based or into that stuff as far as the white people are concerned. And this is across the country. So there's a lot of things that Black people culturally do not do. We do not do strategy or strategic stuff. We don't do.
And hold on,
you know,
yeah,
unless you're down south.
What?
You know,
no. I was just saying that sound. we always want to add in the majority of us don't do because it's.
Right.
It's a few people.
Yeah,
it's
not a blanket statement. It's just saying like the majority of Black folks really don't do that stuff. We don't go shooting. Most Black folks tend to be against gun ownership, except for like in the South, because they grew up with the culture of hunting some folks and, you know, doing that sort of stuff, even if it's with air guns and stuff, shooting at cans and whatnot. But you have like some sort of gun culture down South. So Black people who grow up down South have a different relationship with guns.
Yes,
North people tend not to really deal with them. And for the most part, it's people who own businesses or legally get them or criminals that pretty much have guns in the North. So that's how that works up here. And it's totally different down South. So as a result, you have an entire group of people that have been practicing racism for hundreds of years who all practice military style stuff. I mean, white people tend to go jogging all the time. So that a lot of them, or a decent number of them, are pretty physically fit.
MMA fighters.
Say it again.
MMA fighters. You know, that's the new. That's
they get into all of that.
Yeah, that's like going to the WAF for them.
Right, and there's just a lot of things that I think we could learn from them, because those are the tactics and techniques they're going to use against us. You saw it play out in Hurricane Katrina when they had I forget the name of that bridge. I think it's the Danziger Bridge. Where a militiaman and I believe there was a couple of police officers set themselves up on the bridge to keep black people out that were fleeing from the floodwaters. And they had gunned down a few people and severely injured a few people that were trying to run for their lives from the water that was rising in Louisiana area. And these white people didn't want these black people coming through their neighborhood. So they basically shot at them. And like you said, it was a choke point. It was a bridge. So they were just pretty much like fishing about. And this is the type of stuff we need to learn about, because this is the stuff that has actually been done to us, both historically and in very, very recent history.
Right. It's not theoretical.
We're so busy. Exactly. And I think that we're spending so much time arguing about our amongst ourselves and making up all of these new factions of people that we're going to have problems with, whether it's the Moors and the Hebrews and the ADOS and the black immigrants. And it's just so much nonsense that nobody's thinking collectively. And then, like I said, you see all the signs of like America being the next Germany and black people in America being the proverbial Jews. Like, you see it. When you look at the fact that there's practically no black bookstores across the country, they've closed them all down. Amazon is starting to censor books. So now you had a book called The Secret Relationship Between Blacks and Jews. There was three volumes of it that the Nation of Islam put out, extremely well documented. All of the sources are actually Jewish historians telling their own history about the fact that they were the main players in the slave trade, and they were the actual, the money men. So they were the ones who were exchanging the money for the slaves, and they were deeply embedded in the slave trade. And this is all from their records. Amazon has now removed those books completely off of us. So they're censoring material. That's what they did to the Jews. They burned their books. They didn't allow them to have any educational material. Then they took the guns away. And black people have the hardest time getting their hands on guns. And then after they got the guns, the people couldn't defend themselves. So off to the concentration camp. Like, we're not seeing the signs there, but they've been there all along. And while we're fighting over nonsense. This is literal nonsense. Literal nonsense. Scotty posted an article earlier this evening talking about the fact that the United States is not being held up economically by large corporations. It's being held up by small businesses. The overwhelming, actually, small businesses created by immigrants specifically. That's what they said. And they said that the overwhelming majority of those immigrants are quote unquote Hispanic. But all the vitriol that I hear amongst the hashtag ADOS folks that are anti-black, because they are not all that way, but the ones that are, they're all vocal about black immigrants, how we're the problem. So, I mean, and these are the things that are happening right around us that we're ignoring to go create this false enemy, this enemy that you conjured up in your mind because you're doing something that's, you know, necessary for you in order for you to be somehow recompense for the treatment of your ancestors that has nothing to do with immigrants whatsoever. There's no immigrant movement that is against that situation. I think that is the dumbest shit I've ever heard. Excuse my friend. It's just dumb. But you have all these little infighting situations between all these groups, and this is the stuff that's happening all around us that lead to the understanding that they're going towards a situation like Dr. Welsing predicted before she passed, where they go back to an overt form of white supremacy akin to the 1800s during slavery. Then you have, and I put the articles, I wanted to get into a couple of them in the thread, video articles on dealing with our children. And Dr. Clark said this in like 1991. He said the educational system in this country is geared towards getting African people to accept their own re-enslavement. And you got one video with black people, white people saying that black people should be placed in concentration camps. These are college age students or high school students saying black people should be in concentration camps, everybody except for the rappers and the football players, because they entertain white people. That's what they say in the video. Then the other one is about a school in the Bronx, Bronxville, New York, where they had the black students sold to the white students reenacting slavery. What did Dr. Clark say in like 1992? What did Dr. Welsman say right before she died a couple of years ago? And we want to be arguing about who's a Hebrew and a Moor and a hashtag ADOS and the nonsensical flat earth, ridiculous, nauseating stupidity, and just every other topic that we can distract ourselves with. And they're showing us that their own children are telling us. They are telling us. Bill Gates is telling us. And they're about to collapse the planet in a way that no one's ever experienced. Like, people have no idea what it's going to be like to wake up one morning and that your money don't do nothing. You go to the store and say, I need to get a little bit of bread just to make some breakfast. And they tell you it's $500 for a loaf of bread. And you look at them like they got eight heads. And they tell you your money ain't worth nothing. I need an asset. You know what people are going to do when that comes out of the mouth of somebody in the store?
It's purge. It's purge time.
I'm telling you, like, black folks, like, we can't conceive of what it's like when this collapses and everything that you're used to, all the rappers that will put money to their head, stack of money to their head like it's a cell phone, and they think it's all, you know, they got all the money, and they wake up and that stack of money ain't worth nothing. All you could do is start a fire with it to survive. People are going to lose their freaking minds. It's going to be just a free-for-all, and there's guns everywhere. So just imagine the predatory nature of people that's going to come out when they wake up one day and the economy's collapsed and everything is different and the truck stops showing up with the groceries, or God forbid the grid collapses. And we're arguing about freaking Moors and Hebrews and flat earth and crap.
Yeah, we can... We can get on that,
man.
Because real quick, we got a question. And,
okay,
brother Otis.
How you doing, comrade?
Hey, peace and love. How you doing?
Hey, much love to you. Look, I want to ask you a question. I'm up at Virginia State University. I just did some presentations with three classes today about ADOS, but that's not my question. I wanted you to share that link to the article on the small businesses, because I went over something in the class with these students telling me. The one thing you must do with all propaganda is to deconstruct it. So I don't have the details of a particular article you read, but I read several over the last couple of weeks that brought up that point. And I'm going to ask you one thing to think about. Name me any collaboration of small businesses that control resources and means of production. If you understand capitalism, you understand any small business in any country is an end user. Just think about that. So I'll just think about the validity of that article, and I'll put it in this context. I also shared another article as it pertains to wealth distribution, where Citilab, which is supposed to be a reputable group of economists, came out with an article saying that you can close the racial wealth gap by income, increasing the income and jobs for black people. And if you don't understand the difference between wealth and income, then you tend to believe what the people in the article said.
Right.
So I'm going to say it to you again. If you really believe in the richest country in the world, that small businesses prop up this country, you really don't understand how wealth is created and who controls the resources, production, control, and distribution of it. I'll leave it there.
Very interesting perspective. And it makes sense as well when you think about it in a way of how do these corporations and the people who own them become billion and trillionaires? It's by commandeering entire markets. literally just completely dominating.
I'll leave it there. I'll give you another recent conversation I just had with a gentleman telling me what the actor Wendell, what's his, I can't think of his last
Wendell
name.
Pierce?
Created, what? Pierce.
Wendell Pierce?
Price or Pierce, the brother that in the area you were talking about with the bridge. He went
Yeah, he was in the, on the wire years ago.
He did a noble thing. He went down as a fairly access to capital and tried to start a market and, you know, bringing New Orleans back. Went to one of the sections and he started a food market. Mm-hmm. Now, if he had done that 30 years ago with the way resources, produce, and products were produced and distributed, he may have been successful. But with the advent of people like Amazon taking over Whole Foods and Walmart distribution and most major distributors of foods and consumables, he could not compete. And they said, the local people said it was because the Black people there would not support his market. The truth is, with one store, he couldn't compete with the distributors to be able to buy in enough volume that he could be competitive. So you have to look at all the variables when you assume that the end result is caused by the people who are trying to consume the product. Because in a capitalist society, what do you look for? Value. So if you have the lowest income individual trying to buy from a person who can't get in the distribution stream and buy at the same rate that his competitors can, what do you have? In other words, everybody competing with him is buying tractor loads worth of food, and he's buying a single truck
right,
a couple times. So you got to look at the mechanism put in place by wealthy people to starve out local people. I'll give you another example. I had a sister class today that told me that her Asian friend told her that she didn't understand why Black people couldn't go into businesses on their own, because what they did is their family moved here and they all lived together in one house and they built a business. So after the sister talked, I said, they all got computers. I asked her to Google who controls the food and distribution that comes to those families. And they went through it. So I gave them the simple answer. You know why those families can do that? Because trade agreements with the U.S. and those countries that provide the capital for them to come here, and whether they choose to live in a single home has more to do with their culture than it has to do with the need to acquire cash, because their cash for them to do it was provided by their government in cooperation with ours. One of the easiest ones to verify that with is sisters that wear hair. You can't get Black people to infiltrate that market because it's already set up that the Koreans are the sole importers. So what do? They process it in their home where the production is done and the acquisition of the hair is done, and they send it here for the end user. So you got to be careful and learn to deconstruct a lot of information you get that sounds good until you get the missing pieces. I'm going to leave it there, gentlemen.
No, thank you. We always appreciate the breakdown. And it makes sense. I was having a conversation with a gentleman yesterday. And they, for whatever reason, we always want to jump on to other people's culture and how they just come in front of us. And I'm like, yo, same thing you said. They have nations that they can run to. Man, you've had this conversation, Roz. We don't have a nation. The one that we do have is hell-bent on keeping their foot on our neck, if not pushing us into the grave. So there's no comparison, and I always have to make that point that you can't compare the two. Two different situations. One has support, one doesn't. One has a history of getting trampled on. One has some country or a nation behind them to prevent them from getting trampled on. It's just two different situations, and it's not fair. Excuse me. It's not equal. It's not an equal comparison.
Let, let's throw in something else that pertains to us as Black people in this country. There's an interesting paradigm going on with ABOS, and I tell you readily, I've admitted on the air on several platforms, I've worked with the two principal people in this movement for about 4 years doing exactly what I did with New Abolitionist Radio. I did research and I shared it with the people that were on that platform. So I'm basically a volunteer nobody behind the scenes. But the most of the organizations that have been here, and I say this as a 66-year-old Black man who grew up in the South believing this is the principle of life. Don't you ask me for an award for longevity if you've been effing it up and creating a revenue stream for yourself and nobody on the ground is benefiting. And I say that with all sincerity, and the facts support what I say. Nobody gets an award for longevity other than by the grace of the Creator, how long you get to survive here on this planet. But if all you do is tell me that you've been in business and at an organization for 30 odd years, and all you're doing is sitting around talking, and you want some credit for having proposed a bill for 30 years, but not refine that bill so it's an instrument that is doing something for the people on the ground, there's something wrong with that. I don't have to tell you what that something is. It is a natural occurrence that if you use your brain, there's something wrong with that. And I'm going to give you an interesting example that I used, and I got shouted down on one platform. CARICOM supposedly got reparations of a year or so ago through their reparations fight with the university in London, one of the big time schools associated with slavery. But when Beckles, who was the man who supposedly brokered that deal, and he's part of the Pan-African movement, when he came out in the paper in his home country, in the Caribbean, and said that it was reparations, do you know what happened? That university got with him and made him retract that statement, because what they said, basically, is we're doing restorative justice. In other words, they ran away from the word reparations because it has a legal context. But when Beckles, who was the man who supposedly brokered that deal, and he's part of the Pan-African movement, when he came out in the paper in his home country.
Hello? Yeah. What just happened?
I don't know.
Are you there?
Yeah. Go ahead. See you too.
And so what I was saying about Mr. Beckles is he had to retract that, because what the university said is we entered into an agreement to help improve, and I'm paraphrasing this, but I can supply you the articles because I put it up on in Cobra's page and asked them why they still had it on the front of their webpage when the man was forced to make a retraction, that they entered into restorative justice. And so it's not reparations. But the question becomes, they knew that their specific tort was with England in that university. Same thing with the rest of the reparations movement. As a matter of fact, there's a big article out about the Europe being forced into some reparations fights with people directly associated with the government of the country that created the tort. So it's not a distraction from global reparations if you understand how these fights have to be fought. And people keep going around and around about it. I just spent time in the university with a professor today, over 6 hours, going over that and having her Google and look up the stuff that I'm telling her. So the idea that ADOS is rejecting immigrants or Black immigrants is not really the whole story. The whole story is making a definitive claim and forcing this reparations movement that has idled for 30 years into the national mainstream argument. Because most people keep saying the government ain't gonna give you this and give you that, and I'll tell you basically what the argument is. Jews have been getting reparations since 1952 from governments all over the world based on 6 million of them dying in the Holocaust. And those governments, each time they find out, the international companies and the government, it has been a continuous process. Now, I was born in 1953. So if I tell you, if you look at the money supplied to Jews since 1952, then you have to understand reparations for the tort against us would have to be multi-generational. It is not just about money. It is about some of the same things that I just talked to you about. And if you go to Sandy Darity's work and find out that he has a 10-point thing talking about reparations, saying it is basically restorative justice along with financial payments, the ability to control your own schools, the ability to have a, basically a form of autonomy here that restores our rights as full citizens. And my work with them, I've been pushing what you all know that I'm about, abolition, because I keep saying to them and fight and having the discussions with them nonstop that repealed and replacing the 13th exception clause has to be part of any reparations done in this country, because slavery is still legal. And I got that across to 3 different classes of 54 students today, and they're starting to understand that. So the idea that the leaders in the reparations aren't doing things right and or some kind of personality, that really has nothing to do with our cause as a people, and I'll leave that alone.
All right. Well, I got a response to that, but Brother Scotty, greetings. How are you doing? Appreciate your help earlier this evening. Greetings, go ahead with your question.
Hey, greetings to everybody, Ross and Otis and anybody that's listening to the stream. I want to respond to some of the things that Otis said or offer my opinion up. On the bill thing, a bill ain't doing nobody no good. I'm in agreement with that. That's just a bill. What's a bill? A proposal. It's not a law. And the main people that you fought for that is the Congressional Black Caucus. Because you got people up there like John Lewis, who I had shared an article. I don't know if that's the one Ross was referencing to earlier, but John Lewis and this other Democrat who is Latino, I believe, is introducing legislation to give not permanent status to quote unquote dreamers, you know, the children who were brought here as children and they live nowhere else since they were like toddlers and elementary school age and whatnot, but to give them legal status to have access to public funds to go to public colleges and universities. And John Lewis and a lot of them Black Democrats will be fronting on a lot of these issues for immigrants and following the lead of Hillary Clinton and the whole Democratic Party machine. But we don't see them advocating and pushing like they should be pushing. We got to understand how politics work. Okay, Speaker Pelosi, you want me to vote on this bill that's going to authorize this country to get this much money in aid, because they give money away all the time now, okay?
Facts.
They give them money. So you want me to vote on that? Well, I'm telling you, you know, you won't bring the bill to study reparations to a vote on the floor, then I'm not voting for it. That's how it worked, right? Ain't that how the politics work in the United States and the U.S. Congress? Is they trade votes. They try to get each other's support by saying, hey, I'll support you on this if you support me on that. So mm-hmm. The main blame on why this bill has been languishing in Congress or reintroduced in different forms, and again, it's just a bill to study reparations and determine what would be that reparative justice. Okay, so he's right. It ain't doing. I can't speak for Cam or any other people or these organizations. I don't know what they're doing behind the scenes. They could be doing all they can to lobby the Congressional Black Caucus, but I know who hasn't been lobbying. That has the biggest voices, and it might be because we really don't have that voice, and that's Black media. We don't have Black radio stations like we had back during King's time to organize the millions of black people listening to radio. Right now, you know, only we could probably say a million, maybe 2 million, maybe 3 million is kind of plugged into alternative, true independent news media and talk radio in different formats. When I say talk radio, that includes video shows and stuff like that. The vast majority of black people get the same source. They have the same sources of information as the majority of everybody else. That's MSNBC, that's CNN, that's whatever's coming across that cable television box. Okay? Hey, those people you don't see black people on there 24/7, 365 days a year. And of course, you can't do it every day. But why reparations only come up during the presidential election? Why it only come up then? Why wasn't this an issue during the midterms? And shout out to Ayanna Pressley and the new freshman congressman who have signed on to reparations and pushing, you know, to have that bill become law. And what have you? I don't think Trump will sign it into law. But Nancy Pelosi again ain't even brought it to the floor. And we know there's infighting right now between I'm gonna call them corporate Democrats or establishment Democrats and these quote unquote grassroots progressives like AOC or Ayanna Pressley or the sister out of Minnesota or whatnot. So that's where the number one blame lies. It doesn't lie with the grassroots organizations. And what have you. It has to do with the politicians and the lack of education of the general public because we don't have our black media, you know, and that is why I feel so strongly about we do need the talking. We need the talking, but, you know, not enough people are included in that conversation and that conversation being controlled by CNN and the others. So, you know, we're going to point any fingers. Point it at the Congressional Black Caucus. Point it at yourself and your fellow voters in your district or why you ain't being made this an issue, you know, whenever somebody's running for office, not just for a president. Damn that. You also need that congressman or that congresswoman to vote for that bill for it to become law. So you know, that's why I put the most blame in terms of the anti-immigrant stuff. Now, Otis, that's you speaking for yourself. Long as I've known you, I've never known you to really be xenophobia or whatnot. I've always known you to understand that the struggle against white supremacy and slavery is a global one. Okay. And so, but there are people within who are using that label, and it is a label, using that label or identifying just as I choose to identify as a black man or what have you. Or choose to identify as an abolitionist, people are choosing to identify as ADOS. The social media record speaks for itself. There are people using that label who are anti-immigrant and have expressed it. And for whatever their personal reasons or whatnot, and it trickles down. And it trickles down. And then again, since we're dealing with a hashtag in social media, how many of them, we don't know how many of those people are real or whatnot. And they could be infiltrating because I know definitely some right-wing conservatives organizations have been posting using that hashtag and arguing against immigrants. And then I look up their website and who's funding them. And I trace it to a right-wing conservative white think tank with a white woman running it. So now you're lashing on. Wait a minute. Why you as a black conservative organization not on Donald Trump or on Candace Owens or any of these other Republicans in pushing the issue of reparations? You know what I'm saying? They not doing, them black conservatives ain't really doing it. So be careful of them too, okay? Because they are definitely down with Trump's xenophobic message and what have you. So that's all I wanted to add, but the people I most blame is the people most responsible. And that's white people, as Gus would say, races in particular.
Okay. And I know you have some. Thank you, Scotty. I know you have something to say too, Ross. Sure. But before me and you get ours out, because we still ain't even gotten to the topic, and this is a great transition topic too to what's most important Go ahead, Brother Otis.
All I'm going to say is I understand exactly what Brother Scott is going to say, but I'm just going to throw this in. One of the best articles, number one, reparations, the movement to get reparations on the consciousness of Black people started shortly after Ta-Nehisi Coates' article. And it's been about 3.5 years struggle to do it. And I can tell you specifically when it finally went mainstream is because a few of us that have been working in the background knew that Kamala Harris was going to announce that she was running. And the reason we knew it is because some researcher, when she went to Martha's Vineyard with the Hillary Clinton crowd, and I'll try to speed it up so you can get it because you know you guys can email me and I can give you the links to it.
Oh, yeah.
So what happened is we planned and did the research on her background in California, and I had a lot of the background from doing the abolitionist work. So I supplied that to the ADOS people, and then they followed up on some of it. So when she did announce, Yvette and Tone did shows talking about why she was using her Blackness to cover her actual record. Now, I'm not even going to get into the xenophobia part because we can talk about that separate, because what the issue had become is once we got her for using Black sorority and Martin Luther King's birthday as, quote, being Black, and then find out that she's actually Indian, her upbringing and her whole culture was done by her mother in the public record. And she's estranged from her father, who ends up being part Asian and Jamaican and not, quote, Black Jamaican. Now, since Roz knows a little bit about the island, he understands that racial construct there as far as racism is concerned, because there's a little bit different structure when you're tethered to the Asian or Indian rich people on that island versus what would normally we think of as the people that we know, the Rastafarians and the people with reggae. So there's a divide there on that island. So we brought that out talking about how the stuff she did was detrimental to Black prisoners, Black mothers, and stuff with truancy. So once that was brought out, that is what ended up getting reparations in, is when Joy Reid brought a Black female on to say that ADOS was Russian bots. Now, the information from the people who did the research for us showed that Russian involvement during the 2016 election that supposedly swayed Black people into not voting for Hillary actually was 0.0083% of total internet traffic. So what you're saying to us is what they've always done. Said that Black men didn't vote for her because of Russian influence, when in fact, Black people didn't vote for her, and here's the kicker. Hillary Clinton had more Black females leading her campaign on the face of it. I put up some Facebook posts, and it looked like somewhere between 10 and 15 Black women were actually the face of her supposed to be campaign. And what it ended up coming out is those women complained because when they told her that she should have gone to Milwaukee, she should have gone to Ohio, she should have gone to Pennsylvania, and one other country, state, was four of them, because of the unrest between the Black people not wanting to vote for her tethered to her husband. She ignored them and she went with the Podesta groups saying that what she needed to do was spend her money to do what? Pull off the white people that would not vote for a racist named Trump. So what I'm saying to you is reparations came up because to fight back on what we were doing to Kamala Harris, they tried to vilify ADOS and claim that they were Russian bots. And I tell you exactly what my tweets to them that are in the records. And Vox even looked at some of it, but they didn't use it in the article. I asked that supposed to be intelligence lady, digital sister, who claimed that it was well known in the intelligence community that Russian bots had infiltrated ADOS. In 2017, Twitter admitted that the reason they have a hard time fettering Outbox, which is basically a software package that doesn't have to use humans, but sometimes does, is because they do not have the bandwidth. Now, also have access to some techies that work on that kind of infrastructure, and they claim that what Twitter did really is issue out the limit on what they wanted to do on blue check people so they could control the flow of information on Twitter. So my point to you is an end user of a hashtag has nothing to do with what someone else does with it. It is the responsibility of the platform, be it Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, to control when someone is using software to manipulate their platform. So when you type in anything, I don't care whether it's a hashtag I use for abolition, 14 words, or a big lie, I'm not responsible for anybody choosing to use software to manipulate that platform. So the hit on ADOS is being botched or against immigrants is wrong, because if you actually read the platform, it has nothing to do with immigrants as people. It's the use of immigrants to displace Black people in this country. And that is a fact based on the statistics at HBCUs, as nursing industry, and several others. That is just the data, not my feelings. Thank you, gentlemen, for the ability to talk.
Thank you. Thank you, Otis. Thank both of you. Before I give mine's, go ahead, Ross. I could feel you over here.
No, I was actually excuse me. I was just taking in everything, because both of them make salient points. I do know that I've actually been on a lot of YouTube pages and personally seen the vitriol. So I don't know how. Like I said, I don't think it's the majority of ADOS people, but there are people out there, and they make their feelings known. And the approach is not that immigrants are being used to, and pretty much used as buffers, in other words, to kind of replace American Africans in the job market or in different scenarios. It's more like they are the problem. And that I've even heard things like we're stealing their identity. And like when cops stop somebody, like one guy said in the news, they'll say that a Black male did such and such and so and so. And then later on, I remember like the guy who kicked the elderly Black woman, the Black male who kicked the elderly Black woman on the New York City subway. That was like trending for like at least 2 weeks recently. And they said Black male does so and so and so and so. And then it comes out that he's actually from the Dominican Republic. So there was a whole video with a lot of people who tend to chime in on this guy's platform, who where he said that they need to separate Black Americans from Black immigrants, because when you use the term Black in that way, it's only that people are assuming that the person's African American, but this was actually a Caribbean immigrant who, you know, did this heinous act, so and so and so and so. So we need to separate ourselves from that. This was actually the whole premise of the video, with a whole bunch of people who chimed in agreeing, and that's just one example. So this is actually, those weren't bots. Those were real people who actually had an opinion. Some of them were even speaking in violent terms. So I understand what you're saying, and that's definitely something that has been used as far as just different forms of AI and algorithms and those sorts of things to tweak numbers in certain aspects and subjects, especially on the internet. So I don't disagree with what you're saying. But I will say that there are absolutely people out there who do so, because there's even other people on YouTube that have actually answered some of those videos in constructive manners. And then you've also had immigrants who answer those videos in non-constructive manners. And I've seen it get ugly in some of these comment sections, just with like the insults just start to go. And it just it's really depressing to go online and see all of this vitriol. And everything, I've said this to many people, this has happened in Trinidad. This has happened everywhere in the Caribbean. That's about everywhere that's been colonized. Anytime you have a group of slaves, and when especially when you look at how it happened in the Caribbean, Central and South America, where the slaves outnumbered the slave masters in many cases as much as 80% as far as the population makeup. And
they wanted to offset their numbers politically once they freed them, because they didn't want black people completely ruling over themselves and taking over the politics of the country by having the majority numbers. So they started to bring in the Chinese immigrants and the East Indian immigrants. That's what happened. So when you go to Trinidad today, you find that there's a political struggle. The East Indians outnumber physically the population, the black Trinidadians by about, I think, 2 or 3% now. Before it was literally neck and neck, where they were like almost half and half. And it has created this political offset. And then you have to take into account that some East Indians come to the islands with the caste system mentality. So anyone who's black or African would be considered an untouchable. And they have very, very nasty terms that they use to describe black people due to that caste system mentality. I have some people in my family that have that mentality that I don't deal with. So when you're talking about immigrants being used that way, that is a tactic that happens everywhere. And the crazy part is these immigrants also take over the illicit industries as well. When you go to Trinidad, it's the Lebanese and the Syrian Jews that run the entire drug trade and the gun trade. And all the guns end up in black neighborhoods. And all the people who are dying are black people. You don't hear anybody ever killing a Libyan or Syrian in Trinidad. You hear very few Indians that get killed in Trinidad. But when you go talk about the black neighborhoods, the most famous of which is Laventille, is deadly. It is more deadly than any place in the United States you could think of. And it's all the guns go to these black people, and these black people go around killing other black people. And when you go to all the islands, it's the same sort of behavior. So you have the Syrian mafia that runs that, and you have the East Indian mob that brings drugs and guns into Trinidad. And again, they also end up all in black people's hands. And when you go to Jamaica, you find the same thing in all across the islands. So this is a buffer class scenario that colonizers have used ad infinitum because it works. The local people, especially the native people to that area, don't get the political rules that's being used against them. And the immigrants don't know, because they're coming as guests in the country of the people that control that country. So when they come here, it's not black people controlling the politics and everything that happens. It's white people. So you do things the way they tell you to do things as an immigrant. You don't understand the dynamics of what's happening between the people who are already there before you got there and the same people that control the economy that you're walking into. You're just trying to get in where you fit in. You come from a horrifically third world country where you couldn't get anything. So you're just looking for, you know, a decent opportunity to get yourself set up and try and take care of your family. So there's a big disconnect between the people coming in and the people who are already here. And because they use the media and even social media to successfully manipulate the psychology of the local people, as well as they use the same tactics to manipulate the psychology of the people that come here long before they even get here about Black Americans, the disconnect starts off from the very beginning. And unless people are able to come together, and I think just to send my condolences to Nipsey Hussle and his family. We're not going to discuss that. There's more than enough people discussing it, but I do want to, just give him a rest in peace shout out, because he was trying to do a lot of work to help black people where he was from. And he was, his mother was American African. His father was Somali American. Great example of what broke that was a barrier broken between an American African and an immigrant. And they had an incredible child who came from a troubled background, but completely changed his life. So, I mean, these are the things that we should be looking to, and we should be also fostering some form of communication so that the people who are being used as that buffer class get to understand the dynamics of how that works. And maybe they can help assist in changing that. But to overtly blame them and then not only say that they're taking their jobs or whatever else that they're doing, but they literally are the problem. It's like they become the poster children of the problem rather than the white people who put them in that position. And especially for working class immigrants. I'm not talking about affluent immigrants who come here on a whole different situation and they know a lot of what they're doing and how that's going down. I'm talking about the overwhelming majority, which are working class people who come here with big dreams of trying to change the lives of themselves and their family. So these are the kinds of things that I think there's just so many things that we are we have dissension created amongst us around. And there's so many bigger things that are way more important than the things that we allow to create dissension amongst us or xenophobia. There's just way too much happening at the same time. And there's this looming global economic collapse that no one is prepared for because no one's ever lived through it before. And there's a lot that's coming. And if we don't really get past those things to look at the bigger picture and really think about solving problems. When I look at Nipsey Hussle, I don't see a rapper. I don't see an ex-Crip. I see a brother who made mistakes, and he literally lived his life solving problems and attempting to solve problems for people who look like him. The day that he died, he was supposed to have a meeting with the LAPD the next day in regards to assisting them because he had ideas on how to curb the gang violence. This was a guy who traveled around doing motivational speaking. He was anti-gentrification. He had bought up properties in the neighborhood where he grew up, where some of those people who owned those properties at the time used to be rude and disrespectful of Black people. And once he bought those properties, they're renting from him. So to go from going to those stores and having those people who at one time may have owned that place or run that place talk to you like you're trash to having to answer to you and pay you rent to take up space in that space. He used to talk about that, how great it felt to go from being mistreated to like, yes, sir, you know, whatever you need done is done because you run stuff now. It's an example for us to look at in regards to what we can aspire to do. He created marijuana dispensaries so that brothers who couldn't get a job when they got out of prison, couldn't find a legal job to save their lives, they were able to get a legal job in a marijuana dispensary that he owned, and he gave them paycheck. This is the stuff his brother was doing. Mistakes included, you know, gangster rap included, but when you look at the actual body of his work, he was about that work. And these are the types of things that we need to take as examples, and we need to really work on our mental health. On the cows, that's like a running theme. Black mental health is really, really real. The guy who killed him was a dude with mental health problems. He was a killer. He was a snitch. He was a aspiring rapper, which was what surrounding the situation. But ultimately, he had mental health issues as well. And we have to really start looking at that because it's major. 400, 500 years of no mental health, but complete terror, abuse, and genocide on every level humanly possible. And we still don't have systemic mental health for our people. And we wonder why they act out. We act out like we do, myself included. We are damaged people, barely keeping things together, a lot of us, psychologically, because we walk around with current traumatic stress disorder. There's no post about it because we're continuing to suffer. And that should be a big part of the reparations, too. How are you paying me reparations for what you did to my ancestors and you're still murdering our people in the street every day? So you're going to have to pay reparations in perpetuity because y'all haven't stopped killing us. The cops haven't stopped murdering people and all the other things that we experienced. So there's a lot for us to work on, and we have to do it by coming together to solve problems and admit to each other we've wronged each other, and there's a lot of work we have to do and actually put in the work to get past those things. Those things have happened. Let's move on to what's really important, because those things cease to be important while, you know, catastrophe is looming over our heads globally. That's all I have to say about it. I hope I didn't talk too long.
No, you fine. I think everyone had a brilliant insight, because the different levels of perception is what needs to be highlighted in this case, because every one of you had something. excuse me. I'm sorry. Each one of you had a specific issue that you was addressing, and that doesn't mean that the other two issues were incorrect, because all of these things are happening, and it's nothing new, and it's not just about reparations. It's not just about ethnic identity. It is something right. That we have continuously done anyway. We do this in our families, we do this in our neighborhoods, we do this over regions, when we're in the military. We are just combative. We have to learn, we have to get to a place to where we recognize that and we understand why we do it. Once we begin to understand why we do it, it'll be a simpler fix. But for whatever reason, we don't want to acknowledge that we are not a unified people. Truth is truth. It's going to take a long time for us to stop disliking each other. But before any of that can happen, we have to admit that we don't like each other. So this this ethnic identity crisis based off of reparations, before Otis had brought that, I was under the impression that it was Yvette and her partner that was saying this. But after I listened to a few of those programs, what I find is, like you were saying, Roz, it was a lot of the followers. And what I take this as is the same thing that old racists felt when Trump came into office. They didn't have no power. Only thing they had is that they was white. That's the only thing they could muster up. But now when Trump come in, they get, you know, they muscles get bigger, chest get inflated, you know, yeah. Trigger finger get a little more itchier. All of these different things start happening because they was
a black woman.
Say again.
Then they assault a black woman and say that they fear for their lives.
Right, because there's no repercussions. And it's the same thing with us, with this particular situation. It's a lot of people that's making these arguments simply because they have nothing better going on. And that's just the facts of it. They believe that they're finna get something which would put them in a better place that they are now. And anybody that's in opposition to that is the enemy. Point blank. Because some of these people are friends on the different sides of these discussions. Mm-hmm. You know, and up until it came up, there was no issue. And it's still not an issue, but only in the mind. So we have to understand all of that. And like the topic that we supposed to been on, what's most important? Because these reparations are not going to start tomorrow. But if you run into that person that you was, if you run into that person that you've been talking crazy to on Facebook over an ADOS point, that could get you locked up or killed, because there's a lot of degrading terms that's being spewed around over the internet. And eventually, just knowing our people, it's going to be a clash. Now, if it was a white person doing it, let's give it a smaller percentage. 7 times out of 10, wouldn't nothing happen? But if it's a black person doing it, almost 10 times out of 10, when I run into him, he going to get this work. And we got to get out of that. A lot of these things that reparations is going to provide for us is an opportunity to be honest with ourselves. A lot of us are not. Because you're going to have to prove who you are first and foremost. And then you're going to have to answer for all of those lies that you've been telling to yourself since you was a child and your grandmother was a child. All of these things are going to come out. And then where we going to be at? Are we still going to be fighting based off of that? Do you have to switch sides once you find out that you're not what you thought you were? That's not going to stop the mistreatment that we're all receiving. Just things to think about. Brother Otis had another question before we get out of here tonight. Brother O, your mic is open.
Yeah, I just want to say quickly on what we talked about. Number one, you have to understand in the movement, and I'm sure most of y'all do, you're going to have individual outliers that don't get it and they have vitriol. But the focus when it comes to any kind of national movement is not personal strife, because we understand, just like Roz was talking about, the mental health and all of that. Hurt people hurt. That's just like trying to blame people in Detroit or Chicago that grew up, or even Nipsey, that grew up in a certain environment. That's the only lifestyle they know. And then that man changed his life. I literally had an argument or discussion with a guy because he said that man could never be good. Now, Ross just laid out a bunch of reasons why it could be. Now, that person that happened to say that to me happened to be somebody that's with the Nation of Islam. But I told him, if you're human and don't believe in redemption or the ability to change and do good, there's something wrong with you and you're lying to yourself. So there's no need of me having an argument with you. If you're a human being telling me you've never done wrong, intentionally or otherwise, there's something wrong with your own psyche and you're not being honest with yourself.
Right.
But the point I'm trying to make is, when it comes to a reparation movement, it is not about personalities. And I'll show you what I mean. The gentleman, Mark Thompson, that calls himself minister, who is a key person in COBRA, I watched him get put off of Twitter, locked out of Twitter for about a day or so, because he called a black woman that asked him a question, a concubine of the white racist, and she reported him. Now, that's a minister who actually went on TV on Joy Reid and explained how ADUS is Russian bot leaders, and they're just ignorant and don't know the facts. Now, that's a minister that made these claims. Now, I'm going to tell you the interesting part of it. Sandy Darity, who spent almost 30 years, but 20 years working on how to do reparations within the framework of a capitalist country called America. And he'll tell you proudly, his work is specifically about reparations for American descendants of the institution of slavery. Not just the supposed to be 1619 to 1865, but the entirety of the ongoing tort of slavery, meaning even the redlining and the wrongful executions, the police and everything. This is well documented. I shared a lot of it over the last 4 days, going back to some of his older videos and from 5, 6, 7 years ago. But the man readily tells you, the only reason he got started in doing his reparations is because he was asked to write a foreword for a person, a black scholar, who was talking about reparations over 20 years ago. And he said, he told the man, I didn't think I was the right person to do that. But after reading the man's book and writing the foreword is what started his work. So what I'm saying to you is, regardless of the individuals in this fight is about waking up the people who deserve reparations. And that's one of the reasons I stay with working with Yvette and Tone, as I said before, on other platforms. And I have personal discussions with one of them on a regular basis. I don't like everything they do as a person. And I talk to them about those grievances because I'm 66 and I have a different perspective. They're in their 40s and late 30s. Their attitude is, I'm young. So I understand that the youth are going to be the ones that break this through. And I'm going to tell you again, I believe when the majority, the tipping point of black people in this country understand what reparations is about, you will find out if trying to destroy Democrats or Republicans is changing this whole damn system. If it's done right, the first third party that has any clout in this country will be black people.
Well, you know, you have to pay the politicians.
You understand where I'm coming from.
No, I agree with you. I know you have to pay the politicians to get things done, and that's one of the avenues that people in my circle that I grew up around, they never did. After my grandmother died, she used to go around collecting money to give to the local politician to get things done in the community where I'm from. So I've seen these hand-to-hand exchanges and monthly visits to come get the pockets lined. So I understand quite well, but it still falls to the point to each individual has to be adult enough to understand these are your opinions. All of these different tactics have to happen. I'm not familiar with NCOBRA. I got familiar with NCOBRA by the attacks upon NCOBRA, just to go see who they are, why are they even mentioning them. So a lot of these things are ongoing, and it's a continuation regardless of how a person would like to look at it, it started back then. It's being continued on with the new generation. Later on, it's going to be somebody else, if it haven't happened, that's going to be continuing on this particular movement. Again, we have to be adults about this and understand the people who are just spewing the hatred, these are their opinions. But we also have to realize that those opinions can turn physical at any time because of the history and how we have been cultivated to think about each other and interact with each other. So it's, things are going to happen. Things are going to be said. As long as they continue to do that work, they doing all of us a great justice because it can only help everybody else from that point on. It's going to be people who want to be mad just for the fact that they want to be mad. These things happen. Again, it goes back to that mental illness that, you know, PTSD is it's very serious. And considering a lot of us was born in those type of climates and continue to be mistreated, watch our parents get mistreated, our spouses get mistreated, our children get mistreated. Like, this has never stopped. And part of the reason why I took the last month off, just to kind of clear my head. It's been a long time since I had a mental break. And I feel great. And hopefully all of you feel great tonight, too. Sorry we started a little late. Roz, thank you for always being right there when I need you. I appreciate that. Brother Scotty, shout out to you. Checking Absolutely. In on me and what have you. Brother O, always love your information, and I will definitely be looking forward to that, what you're going to send. And
Absolutely.
If you don't have nothing to add before we close tonight, Brother Roz, hit us with the prayer.
All right. Before we close out, I just want to say that I know that we've been conditioned for so long globally that we will not all get along, and that is just a fact. But what we can do is set aside our differences to solve problems, and once the problems are solved, then you don't have to like me anymore. That's fine. I don't have to like you.
Right.
You don't have to agree. You know, as long as we're in a situation where we can live our lives in safety in whatever bag we choose to be in, if we choose to be in a bag with another human being. That's what it's about. When you look at white people, everything that they are doing to us, they did to themselves first. They perfected it amongst their own first. And then they put aside their differences, created a pan-European global agenda, and dominated the planet. What we are witnessing today is the...
Did you just say a pan-European?
Absolutely.
Okay, I'll just make sure.
Yes, that when you look at that global conquest, it was a pan-European conquest. You had the Spanish in competition with Portugal and England. And, I mean, it was just everybody in competition with each other to get lands of indigenous people globally. And they set aside their differences long enough to do so. They had battles along the way. It wasn't perfect, but they understood the bigger objective was dominating non-white people. And today we're seeing the complete collapse of that. Now you got Russia and China. And matter of fact, I just saw an article, a video article that came out saying that that the U.S. cannot invade Venezuela because Russia got there first. And today, China secretly, they claim, ushered in about 100 of their own military soldiers into Venezuela as well. So there's Chinese pawns on the board, and Russia's all up in there. So if America does something, it's going to create a major scenario moving forward. So this is the type of stuff we're witnessing. It's America against the rest of the world. The pan-European bloc is collapsing because everybody's basically on the nationalist game. So everybody's doing what's in the best interest of their particular nation. So that's collapsing. All of that stuff they set aside is being resurrected, and people are going against each other. So if we can actually learn from what they did to dominate the planet, as far as putting aside our differences long enough to solve our problems, we can solve the problem. We really could. And again, it doesn't have to be everybody. All we need is a critical mass, because that's how it always starts. When you look at the Cuban Revolution, there was very few people that got that stuff set off. But once it got set off, it was like a wildfire. It started to just take root, and more people started to get involved and voice their opinions that they were fed up with the way that things were being run by the previous ruler. And that's what we have to do with our people, but we have to really start learning the nuances in history as to what's happening. When you move to another country, try to learn as much as you can about the history of that country. And if there are marginalized groups of people, try to connect with those marginalized group of people and see if you can learn more about what they're not going to teach you. Because the bottom line is we all get the same crappy education from the people who run things. So American Africans don't know what they need to know, and the immigrants are getting the same inadequate racist education, so they don't know what they need to know either. And this is what we have to do with each other, and that will be the beginning of us being able to make those connections we need to do what we need to do to solve problems. Our problems.
Yeah.
And like they say, when black people solve their problems, everybody's problems solve, because we are the most abused people on the planet. And that's the way it's been, especially in the history of America, but globally it's the same thing. Black people solve problems for themselves, and it just becomes a tidal wave effect for all the other people that are non-white who are being victimized. Go ahead, General, what you gonna say?
Oh, no, I was just finna add, alongside of unity, where I think that's unattainable. I think it's going to be very hard for a lot of us to love each other also. I think that's unattainable. I mean, as a group, as a whole, but there is one thing that we could do, which we could all practice on a day-to-day basis, and that's respecting one another. But, you know, that's part of that, that new culture that I can bring up every now and again. Talking about simple things we could do to just better relate to each other in the street, the people that we actually are physically in contact with. And that respect is one of those things that we could start giving each other, because we don't. I mean, just we don't as a people. So that's all I was going to add, is just we could start trying to respect each other. And that'll foust off, it'll throw off all kind of side effects all on its own.
I agree completely. And lastly, before we go, is there something I want to say? Because we're going to end up picking up on some of these things next week, just because there's some really good clips that we didn't get to get into. But I just want to say this about one of the clips, and we'll end up hearing it next week. There was a video called Northern Black Against Southern Black. And it was actually a news clip. And this was around the time of the, I believe, the late Great Migration. And you had a room full of Northern Black folks, from different cities across the North, whether it's Detroit and Cleveland and L.A. And I don't think New York was there, but they might have been. But there was a room full of them. And they weren't all light-skinned or mixed race. You had some that were, you know, darker-skinned as well, but the majority of them were, like, medium Black to light Black. And the way that they talked about the coming of Southern Black, it sounded so much like white supremacy.
Just hold it. Just hold it.
No, I'm just real quick.
I was saying meeting, we discussed the problem of integrated housing, and we found out that almost 1,700 Negroes are moving into Los Angeles a month. By 1970, there'll probably be a million Negroes in this city. And I know that people are concerned about this. They may not talk about it very often, but I certainly heard them shudder in church when he said there'd be a million Negroes in Los Angeles.
We shudder because we're saying, in essence, the majority of these people are not like we are. And we felt that we, maybe some of us felt we left the South because we were getting away from this problem. We are a part of this exodus too, but we are a little maybe embarrassed by the fact that here we're going to have a mass element come in that's going to create a tremendous social problem in the community, to which we find a great deal of difficulty in relating to.
Well, I don't want to sound like a do-gooder, because I really am not, and I'm somewhat of a snob, but I do think that with these people coming in who are not our intellectual equals, nor are they of our sociological bracket, they're not to be a handicap to us. They'll find their own level. Now, I do sound like a snob, but I don't mean it this way. But they're used to living a certain way,
And they too might rise up above their origin and might one day be our associates.
The whole tone of this meeting is a second profession of being a Negro. And we are out here a while and we're working in our own field, and then we find out that here these same problems are following on the heels of 1,600 Negroes a month that come into Los Angeles. Now this gives us problems. It's our own view. It's our own identifying with these Negroes that are coming in with their carpet bags that causes us problems. This is all.
See, I just wanted to go ahead and just play it. It was short enough that...
Cool.
But go ahead.
No, I was just saying that, like, when you listen to that, it reminds me of what Dave said as far as not becoming what you had to endure. Mm-hmm. And you hear some of that in the psychology of what's being spoken by these Black folks who have been in the North longer than the new incoming Southern Blacks that were running from the terrorism they were facing down South. And it's a similar sort of expression that we've been hearing with some of the immigrant situation. And what it is to me is that we have been cultivated so much in the psychology of competition, but solely with each other. We don't understand that there's a bigger picture outside of them pitting us against each other. And that actually, if we were to come together, it will bolster our numbers to be able to vote in bigger and better blocks to get things accomplished for us collectively. And these are the types of things that we need to work through in order to facilitate solving our problems. When you listen to what some of these folks were saying in the context in which it was being discussed, they sound very similar to some white folks. It's really crazy. And they're not like us and of my social status. And what? Our economic and social status. But yet, both of you can get gunned down in the street for being a nigger. Where is that psychology coming from? It is something that was cultivated in us, and we are all infected by it. And we have to be honest enough with the person in the mirror to say, I have these issues with myself. And as a result, I see everybody who looks like me as a mirror of those things, especially if they display personality traits that are akin to and similar to mine and remind me of those shortcomings. Because that's really what it is.
In some cases,
it's cultivation towards self-hatred, depending on the family life and upbringing you have. And all of these things play on us. And we got the epigenetics of intergenerational trauma and terrorism. We inherit this stuff from our great-great-greatest grandparents. So it's in the genes, and then it's expressed in the environment. And then we're bombarded with social media. Some people as young as 2 years old with cell phones, so they're getting it super early. And we just have to change the way that we cultivate ourselves and cultivate our children. And we're not going to all get along. But like you said, Jenna, respect is the key. It really, really is. And just being able to coalesce around solving problems. And it's been done before. When Malcolm X did the OAAU, he wanted to make sure it was not centered around any religious ideology or anything. It was just centered around solving the problems of African American people and connecting them with their global African family to collectively solve problems for Black people globally. So it's been done. The example's there. It's just never come to fruition. That's why I say no one can ever call Pan-Africanism a failure, because it's never gotten the chance to actually be tried. People have been killed off, or just like Marcus Garvey, you know, legally kicked out of the country. Like, this is what happens all the time. So it's something that's never had a chance to complete its own attempts at being itself. So this is the first time we're working towards that, just like this is the first time that reparations are being discussed in such a feverish and I think more holistic capacity, where people are starting to get a deeper understanding of the mistakes of our ancestors and where we could clean up those mistakes to maybe make political headway. So this is a beautiful thing to watch unfold. Yeah. We just have to keep our eye out for the things that will put us in a position to continue to be abused and misused by the people who dominate us against one another.
Yo, because wouldn't it be horrible while you waiting on those reparations that you do something stupid and wind up a slave again?
Like, oh Lord, yes, that is
like
so true.
these are the options that are being presented, and I don't think a lot of people are even recognizing it. But yeah, I think we have made up for the time lost earlier in the program.
Thanks for staying with us.
If you would, Brother Ross, hit us with
the
prayer.
Yes, sir.
And thank you all for joining us, especially you too, Brother Scotty.
Yes, and Brother Otis, you guys are greatly appreciated. All the callers and listeners, we greatly appreciate you all. Thanks for being patient with us. We had some tech difficulties. We were able to work that out thanks to Scotty's help. And we're back on the grind, so we'll be back next week, Tuesday. Again, we greatly appreciate you all spending this Tuesday evening with us. I believe it's April the 2nd, the day after April Fool's. Please stay out of the hands of slave catchers. Don't do anything that will put you under their radar for any reason. Just keep like what's his name says from the Advice Show, keep your head on swivel. Be alert. Don't be stuck in your cell phone. Don't be stuck in your tablet while you're out in the public or in the streets, because things are happening all the time, especially Black women. Please be safe. Black men, be safe as well, and let's try to come together to look out for each other as well where we can. With that being said, we're going to say the prayers now and close out the show. Creator, we ask that you help us to remain patient with other Black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us to remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect at all times and all places, each and every time that we are in contact with another Black person. It has been time. Let's replace white supremacy with justice ASAP, and let's end human trafficking and the prison industrial slavery complex once and for all. I am in the love of the all, and all love is in me. I am a part of the all, and the all is a part of me. I can succeed as a part of the all and fail as an individual. I can be all that I wish in the all, as long as my wish is to stay in the all. I am never alone. The all is, I am. The all can, I can. The all does, I do. Once again, thanks for spending your Tuesday evening with us. And always remember, like one of my favorite African proverbs says, if there are no enemies within, enemies without can do very little harm. Once again, peace and love. Thanks for spending your Tuesday night with us. Stay safe. We'll talk to you next week, Tuesday. Creative willing. Peace and love and good night. Stay safe. One night.
Peace and love. But before we go, I'd like to, I miss one article. My apologies.
Sure.
This comes from UKRooters.com. And this happened March the 19th, and I had this saved just waiting to whenever we was going to come back on air. Headline reads as follows. Russia backs global use of its alternative SWIFT system. Moscow, March 19th. Russian lawmakers on Tuesday backed the international use of a Russian alternative system for the global financial messaging network SWIFT, designed by Moscow to eliminate the risk of Western sanctions. Russia has held talks with China, India, Iran, Turkey about joint use of Russia's financial messaging system, said Anatoly Eskalava. Yeah, I butchered that pretty good. He heads the Russian Banking Association and Financial Committee with the lower house parliament. Quote, unquote, as the system has proved to be viable and efficient, it draws interest from both Russian and foreign players. It is proposed to give any legal entities, Russian and foreign, the possibility to use it, he says. The lower house parliament, or Dumum, gave the green light to a bill proposed by Exclusive in the first reading. The bill needs to pass two more readings with the Duma and obtain support from President Vladimir Putin to become law. Russia started developing an alternative to the Belgium-based SWIFT financial message service in 2014 after the shock caused by the first round of Western sanctions against Moscow, which were designed to push it for annexation of Crimea and its role in the Ukraine crisis. Amid escalating geopolitical tensions, Russia feared being cut from the global financial system, as happened with Iran in 2012. Now, I'm not going to read the rest of this because it's a pretty lengthy article, but it's basically giving another alert to the world about the BRICS they're having their own. So you have the BRICS nation, then you have the AAIB, I believe, the Asian AAIB,
Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank.
You have that, and now Russia is creating their own, which there has been a lot of discussion in financial circles about the and we've heard this from Dave for years now, but they're having this conversation among the financial leaders openly now. And what we always know, when you start hearing it happen by the media, it's already in play. So just another heads up on that. I wanted to make sure we got that out to the people, just to think about it. Because what we always say, and I got this from Dave, you know, we need to pay ourselves. Go get us some silver here, some silver there. Whatever you can, it's more than most. So please, let's not be left out in the cold. With that said, thank you once again. Hope you enjoy the rest of your Tuesday night. And hopefully we will see y'all next week. Peace and love.
One last thing. There was an article that came out saying that Akon is seriously considering going against Trump for the presidential run in 2020. Ponder on that and let me know if you think Akon really understands what it means to be the president of the United States. And the fact that even though he may want to go in to change things, you can't change a system as old as this one and functions as well as it does in keeping people in check.
Hey, Malcolm X said you need people at all levels. If he's not afraid to die and he want to go up there and try to do that if he can, because if I'm not mistaken, I thought he was born in Africa. So that would kind of
eliminate him. This article came out saying he was seriously considering attempting a run. So I'm like, if he's able to do that, I don't think it's legally possible if he actually was born in Africa, which I believe you are correct, he was.
Yeah.
But we'll see. But it was just an interesting article I posted in the press.
But if he's not afraid to die and think he can go in there and put some laws on the book prior to him being assassinated. Hey, Malcolm X again. You said we need people in every station. And another thing that goes along to the point of what's really important. We was talking about that respect at the end of the broadcast. And I know for sure, because I was always in the thick of the foolishness that used to go on around the blocks and neighborhoods in my community when I was younger. One of the things that we're going to have to get back to doing is respecting these black slave catchers, because although a lot of them do mistreat us, it's not all of them. And sometimes we ask for that mistreatment just by disrespecting them from the get-go. So
my father-in-law joined in order to try and fix it from the inside. After his family went through one of the most heinous racial atrocities in this country's history that has been suppressed. And it was discussed in the Thurgood Marshall movies in Trenton Six. And that experience made him want to be a law enforcement officer, thinking he could change things from the inside. And when he got there, he realized that it was way bigger than him. And, you know, he still did the best he could. He always treated people with respect, and he got respect, you know, because of the fact that he treated people with respect and he carried himself with dignity. But you're right. You know, you're absolutely right. Some of us do go off as soon as we see it's a black person, we'll act up because they're black. Though I've had many experiences personally where black officers were extremely aggressive with me, no matter how pleasant, nice, respectful I was. So I've experienced both sides, and I've experienced the worst more than the good.
I agree.
So it set me with a certain mentality about all police, regardless of what color they were. And I remember I came across a video last year that dealt with the fact that police can be racist regardless of color. And it was because of, they said, basically, I'll paraphrase it shorthand.
The system they're part of.
It's an ingrained system that is inherently against black people, that even though the person is black, they have the power that comes with being an officer. So that, and he, the guy said, is it possible for an officer of color or a black officer to be racist? Absolutely. Because of the power they hold and the fact that they're walking into an already created system that's against people who look like them. And it's just something to ponder about. But then again, they're human beings like everyone else, and they want to make it home to their family and their children like everybody else. So, you know, you have to have a measure of caution and just a semblance of human decency when you're dealing with folks. And, you know, you treat people how they treat you, but understand that cops wield a certain amount of power. So the idea is to make it home at night and try your best to make it home without being accosted in handcuffs before making it home.
Hey,
that's what it's about.
I agree. And I'm going to say this last thing before we get out of here. I'm most definitely not saying that you should trust any slave catcher under any circumstances. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not giving one of those disclaimers to if you had a follow through. No, none of that. All I'm saying is the white slave catcher, when he approach you, you respond to him with respect. I think you could at least do the same thing with these black slave catchers also. That doesn't mean that it would change everything every time. I'm just saying you give the white slave catcher that respect. You should give that black slave catcher that same respect. That's all I'm saying. With that, peace and love. We see y'all next week, God willing. Have a good night. Peace.
One love. Stay safe. Good night.
Turn the mic up, son.